have the power to decide the fate of our planet and ourselves. This is a time of great danger, but our species is young and curious and brave. It shows much promise. In the last few millennia, we have made the most astonishing and unexpected discoveries about the cosmos and our place within it.
Hello, and welcome to the second podcast of Nuclear Physics. In this episode, we're going to talk about nuclear decay. In other words, how the nucleus in the atom tends to break down and eject certain types of particles. Last week, we talked about the stability of that nucleus. And I guess one of the important things to understand is that there's no hard and fast rule that describes when the nucleus is going to decay, what sort of particles it's going to eject. As a general rule, though, you can tell that you can say that a nucleus will become more unstable the more neutrons there are per amount of protons. For example, let's say we talked about carbon-14. That those extra neutrons in there make that carbon-14 a little bit more unstable. The same sort of thing happens with boron and in other nucleus that are pretty small, but given the number of neutrons that you put on those isotopes, can actually break down. The first type of decay that we're going to talk about is a decay called alpha particle decay. And that is when in the nucleus, for example, the nucleus decides to eject suddenly two protons and two neutrons. Now, we call that an alpha particle, but also think about that alpha particle as being the nucleus of a helium atom without its electrons. So, what does this look like? Well, a helium particle without its electrons can be very, very ionizing. Scientists' term ionizing is quite interesting. When scientists talk about ionizing power, it means the ability for that particle to take on electrons. Now let's think about a helium atom with two neutrons and two protons, but without its electrons. What happens there is that that nucleus becomes very eager to take electrons from other atoms around them. And because they're the two innermost electrons, it is quite eager to get those electrons. When I talk about atoms and nucleus, I give them feelings. This is called anthropomorphosis, and I'm sorry if I'm killing the name here. What it actually means is that I'm giving human qualities to things that don't usually have them. In fact, nucleus don't ever have them, but it becomes a lot easier to explain. So think about those two protons and two neutrons suddenly flying into space. Those two protons are very eager to take any electron, and that's what people call the ionizing power. In other words, the ability for that particle to take or steal other atoms' electrons. So we call an alpha particle two protons and two neutrons, and they usually get ejected from that nucleus once the nucleus becomes very unstable. Now, I'm going to talk about a helium nucleus, or I'm going to talk about an alpha particle. I could talk about either of them. They're exactly the same thing. Now, we talked about the helium particle being highly ionizing, in other words, eager to take those electrons. It's also a slower moving particle. And because it's quite big in relative terms, it's easy to stop. For example, a simple sheet of paper will stop all those alpha particles from reaching your skin if you put something in there. In fact, your skin is often very good at protecting your, say, inner organs from those particle bombardment, let's call. So, let's recap. An alpha particle is basically a helium nucleus without its electrons. It's lost them and is very eager to get them. We call that a high ionizing type of radiation. And it basically happens when the nucleus decides to eject two protons and two neutrons together, and that will travel not necessarily very fast, but fast enough. So there goes the first part of that decay, alpha decay. In order to maybe describe some of this alpha decay, let's consider a uranium-238 nucleus. Uranium-238 has 238 protons and neutrons and 92 protons. It tends to decay, if you leave it there on a table by itself, not that I'd advise that, to thorium-234-90, which means that thorium has 90 protons. So magically, uranium has transformed to thorium-90, which is quite bizarre. But what it does is that the uranium has given off an alpha particle. Alpha particle has 4 protons and neutrons and only 2 protons. And also it will give out some energy. So what happens there is that the uranium nucleus has suddenly become very unstable. It's transformed itself into thorium and given off an alpha particle. In the process, of course, losing 2 protons and 2 neutrons and also giving off a little bit of energy. We'll talk about that energy a little bit later. So let's get to part 2 of this nuclear decay. So the second part of the nuclear decay involves this thing called beta decay. And beta decay, you better get your weird brain on, is when a neutron suddenly decides to become a proton and sends out a electron, which is a little bit smaller than a proton, and also this subatomic particle that has no mass that's called an antineutrino. So let's have a look at a very simple example of when this happens. So let's have a look at a little old friend called carbon-14. Carbon-14, as we said before, has got 6 protons and 8 neutrons. Carbon-14 is a really unstable version of carbon. It's one of these things that we call the isotopes. Because it has 6 protons, we call that carbon. So what happens with carbon-14 is that one of the neutrons decides all of a sudden to become a proton. And in the process, it sends off an antineutrino, but also an electron. So then you get a thing called nitrogen. Nitrogen has 7 protons. And remember, this is what determines what element you are, the number of protons. On from a carbon that has 6 protons to a nitrogen that has 7 protons. As I said before, one of the neutrons has now become a proton, sent off an electron that we call the beta particle, and an antineutrino, which is a subatomic particle that has no mass. Now, electrons are a little bit ionizing, probably not as ionizing as, say, a helium atom without its electrons, but nevertheless has a negative charge. So this electron is traveling really, really fast. It's traveling pretty close to the speed of light, which makes it a really fast small particle. And it won't get stopped just by paper. You actually have to put a bit of aluminium foil to stop that. So it is a little bit more penetrating than your alpha particle or the nucleus of a helium atom. And it has not so much its ionizing properties, even though it is a little bit ionizing. It's what we call moderate ionizing. And you can think of it in this way. The electron has got a negative charge. It will tend to put atoms that it encounters a little bit out of balance as the electron gets caught in let's say the orbit of other electrons around. Think about it in air, for example. It might actually latch onto some of the oxygen molecules that are around the air, making it a little bit more ionizing or a little bit what we call a free radical, which is a highly charged oxygen particle. Beta radiation can be a little bit dangerous, but certainly not as dangerous as, let's say, an alpha particle, which has got its a lot more ionizing power. I guess the danger with a beta radiation, or the electrons running around mad, is that it tends to be a little bit more ionizing, but its penetrating power makes it a little bit more dangerous, and it means that it is moderately ionizing. One thing that I should point out, though, is that every time any of those decays happen, whether it's an alpha particle or a beta particle, you always get a little bit of energy coming out. And this is what we'll talk in the next part, the third part of that radiation or that decay, which is called the gamma rays. Every time that the nucleus has a little bit of a transition, let's say a neutron becomes a proton or an alpha particle gets ejected, a little bit of energy comes out of that nucleus. And often that energy will be in the form of a thing that we will call gamma rays. Before we go on, I think it's really important for me to indicate some of the misconceptions that people have about scientists. Often the scientist is pictured as someone that has no imagination, someone that is just working in their lab with their little glasses and their lab coat. One important thing to realize is that in order to understand some of these transitions, you need to have a very good imagination. And how good would the imagination have to be to figure out that a neutron can suddenly become a proton and then an electron gets shot out and an antineutrino? What I'm saying here is that any time that those conceptual changes come into the nucleus, there is a lot of imagination that takes place and a lot of ideas have been floated around. So, the next part of this atomic or nuclear decay is one thing that we call the gamma rays. And as I pointed out before, every time there is a change or an ejection, there's often a little bit of energy that's given out by the nucleus, often in the form of gamma rays. Now, gamma rays are not matter. It's not a beta particle or an electron or an alpha particle or, as we call it, a helium atom without its electrons. Gamma ray forms part of what we call the electromagnetic spectrum. Now, we can see parts of that electromagnetic spectrum through our eyes. Think about the electromagnetic spectrum as a rectangle. We can see a narrow slit of that rectangle and we call that visible light. Think about that big rectangle representing all of the different frequencies of that electromagnetic spectrum. So that rectangle has everything in it. In around about the middle of it, there's a thin slit there that we call visible light. And we can see that through our eyes. On the left-hand side is red light, and we see that as red light. And on the right-hand side of that narrow slit within that rectangle, we call that violet light. Now, beyond the left-hand side, there's a little bit of light or electromagnetic radiation that we can feel, and we feel that as heat. We call that infrared. And on the left-hand side, beyond violet, we call that ultraviolet light, which we can't see, but we can actually feel that as sunburnt. Make sure you put slips off slap and you put your sunscreen on. Right on the right-hand side, we get all the, let's say, harmless electromagnetic spectrum frequencies. That includes things like TV, radio, microwaves. All those are pretty harmless to humans, but they are part of that electromagnetic spectrum. Now, beyond the UV light, on the left-hand side of that visible light that we can see, is a thing called the X-rays. And as we go towards the left-hand side of that electromagnetic spectrum, we find that that electromagnetic radiation becomes more and more dangerous. Now, X-rays, we can withstand it at low dosage, and that's why sometimes when you break an arm, you'll go to the doctor and they'll take an X-ray. And given that that dose is small, it's actually pretty harmless to you. Beyond X-rays, we get a thing called gamma rays, and they tend to be a little bit more dangerous. You all know the story about the Incredible Hulk. The Incredible Hulk got exposed to gamma rays and suddenly achieved some superpowers. That's not strictly true. Just letting you know that the Hulk is not based on a true story. It's a superhero that's fictitious. Let me just say to you that if you were exposed to gamma rays, you probably won't become the Incredible Hulk. You're more likely to die as a result of that exposure. So, every time a neutron becomes a proton and an electron gets shot out, a little bit of energy is given out. More often than not, that energy is given out in the form of gamma rays, which are quite dangerous radiation, and its penetration is huge. It won't be stopped by a piece of paper or an aluminium foil. Often, it'll only be stopped by lead. So, gamma radiation has its penetrating powers through the fact that it's not actually matter. It is actually part of an electromagnetic spectrum. Now, it's important to maybe go back to some historical parts about the whole electromagnetic spectrum. And scientists at the start were baffled as to how a wave, because that's in essence how they thought of the electromagnetic spectrum, could travel through a vacuum. When we think about waves, for example, let's think about perhaps waves in the sea. That energy is transported by waves through a medium that we call water. Sound waves are transferring their energy through waves that are transmitted through the medium of air. But scientists were at first very baffled as how the waves from the sun could actually get to the Earth. Now, there's been lots of experiments done at the time that proved beyond any doubt that light was a wave. Now, we know now that that's not strictly true, and for that we'll need to get into some quantum mechanics, which is a little bit beyond the scope of this course. But let's say that back then, scientists were pretty sure that waves, electromagnetic radiation, were actually waves. This posed a problem. If waves are coming from the sun into the Earth, what is the medium? And scientists began to think about a invisible esoteric medium that they call the ether. Now, later on, when we're in year 12, we're going to talk about the experiments that a lot of scientists did to actually prove that the ether existed. Some of them even proved that it did not exist and died thinking that the ether was actually there, but they weren't able to prove it. It wasn't really until Einstein came around that said that perhaps the ether didn't exist, and that wave displayed both properties of waves and also of particles. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. The important thing to realize here is that gamma rays are not matter. They are part of the electromagnetic spectrum, just like light is, just a little bit more dangerous. We cannot see it, but we can perceive it as being very dangerous, and the exposure to those rays can often result in pretty drastic health effects. So, let's summarize what we found out during this podcast. The first thing we looked at is the way that the nucleus becomes unstable and suddenly goes through a thing called a decay. Now, this decay can take on three different forms. The first form is the form where it, and by it I mean the actual nucleus, decides to eject two protons and two neutrons together. That is a helium particle, because we know that it's got two protons, so it's got to be helium, without its electrons. It's got a charge of +2, because it's got two protons, but no electrons. It is highly ionizing, in other words, very dangerous. It's slow moving, and it's relatively big, so it's easy to stop. A sheet of paper will stop it. The second one is beta radiation. And beta radiation is basically an electron that gets ejected from the nucleus. It gets ejected as a result of a neutron becoming a proton, an antineutrino, a subatomic particle that has no mass gets shot out, and an electron gets shot out. Now, electrons have got a moderate ionizing power. They're negatively charged with -1, and they're very fast moving, close to the speed of light. And the third radiation is that every time there's something going on with the nucleus and something happens, whether alpha or beta decay, a little bit of gamma radiation comes out. This gamma radiation has no mass, and it's part of that electromagnetic spectrum. And it's often the dangerous part of the electromagnetic spectrum. Often on the left-hand side of that, on the right-hand side, sorry, of that rectangle, often denoting a higher frequency, which means that they tend to be a little bit more dangerous than your usual electromagnetic spectrums, such as TV or radio, which are pretty harmless to human. Now, once again, there is no hard and fast rule about this stability of the nucleus and what sort of decay they're going to undergo. Scientists have come up with a number of charts that can indicate what sort of decay certain nucleuses, given the certain amount of protons, what sort of decay they'll go under. And you can actually find them quite easily on the internet or in your textbooks as well. In this chart, often they'll have boxes which will say, well, if it's got 10 neutrons and 10 protons, it will be a more stable form of that isotope. So, once you find these charts, it's important to understand them, to read them, and to actually go through it, giving little examples to yourself so that you can actually find out what sort of decay they're going to go under. Well, we're at the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and the next podcast will be next week, and hopefully we'll hear from some of you very soon. Thank you.
The fate of our planet and ourselves.
Before we go this week, I'd like to thank everybody for giving me some feedback about the podcast. I've tried to make it a little bit longer and hopefully a little bit more information. Keep on going with the feedback. I really, really appreciate it.
About the cosmos and our place within it.